Let me remind you where we are and tell you what the plan is. So, maybe before that, the plan for the second hour of Thursday. So, second hour of Thursday is the last hour of the class. And I will want to do the following things. I will want to discuss the future. So, we're far from completing our agenda. So we may or may not continue, and we could decide on the method to continue if we continue on Thursday. So that's a topic for discussion, and the reason I'm raising it now is that I want you to think about it. Then we have to talk about the final. And again, the idea was that we write it together, so we have to write it. So again, you have to think about it. What do you think should appear on a fair final? Okay? And last, the department wants me to pass evaluation forms, so I will pass evaluation forms. Okay? Now, as for the material, so, you know, when we started the class, I've advertised a 3x4 grid of U knots, V knots, and W knots, and maps between them, and topology, combinatorics, low algebra, and high algebra for each one. And we're still in the first column, and we're not even going to do justice to it. So we haven't just done justice to the parts that we've done, and we're not going to do justice to the parts that are partially done. We haven't touched at all the rest. Anyway, as for today, we're in the high algebra column for usual knots, and there is a part. So in high algebra there is a question and there is a solution. Okay. So the question is to construct a universal finite type invariant which respects all relevant operations. And it becomes an algebraic question because it's enough to define the invariant on finitely many generators and check that it satisfies finitely many relations. We haven't even completed phrasing the question properly. Anyway, the phrasing is here, or is summarized. This is a map of the phrasing of the question, and I'm going to go through more of it today. Okay? There is also answering the question. Now, answering the question in the case of answering the question somewhat depends on how it is phrased, okay? And in the phrasing shown here, parenthesized tangles, and I'll soon remind you what this is, a completely algebraic solution exists, and the reference is the reference on the handout that I gave today, okay? In the other pictures, which are more or less equivalent, but not quite equivalent, and even if they are equivalent, so even if I could borrow the answer from here to here, I'd rather write the answer in this world, where the question is more fun, okay? So in these worlds, I still don't know the answer. I mean, I still don't know how to do the answer right. And I mean, right meaning not by borrowing from here, not by taking information from parenthesized tangles. And since we will not have time to get there, let me tell you what pathetic, miserable linear algebra question it boils down to at the end. Okay? So if you want, you can take it as an aside. Okay? Not truly related to, well, truly related to the content of the class, but I don't know how. Oh, sorry, but I will not have the time to show how. Okay? And this is the following question. So suppose I have a picture. So I hope I'm not misphrasing anything, okay? Because the idea to write it this way just came up this morning. So I hope I'm not misphrasing anything. But anyway, suppose I have a picture like that. I have a length 3 chain of columns of vector spaces and maps between them, okay? So each of these is a vector space, and I have maps going from each one to each other one. And I guarantee that all numbers and dimensions are small. So I mean, it might not be 3, so you know, this is obviously an example, but you know, that it might not be 3 vector spaces here or 2 here, but it won't be 100. It would be a small number. Okay, 5. Okay. Likewise, all the vector spaces are of relatively small dimension, 3 or 4 or 5, nothing more. Okay, and all the maps have tiny coefficients. Okay, are small. Okay, now. I hope I'm not. I'm now a bit fearful that I might be misphrasing. Yes, sorry. So I want to allow not just maps here, so each arrow here is not necessarily a linear map, but a formal linear combination of linear maps. Okay? Formal linear combination just means what it is. Okay? So, a formal linear combination. I know that the space of linear maps is a linear space. Okay? So, but don't use this fact. Just allow, okay, I mean, just like the group ring of R is, you know, form a linear combination, sum AI alpha I, where you don't form the sum. Okay, where you don't compute the products and form the sum. So in the same way, just take form a linear combination. So each arrow could be a form a linear combination of maps. Okay, then given a picture like this, you can apply the functor V goes to T star V, where T star V is the tensor algebra generated by V. So it's equal, so one way of viewing it is it's the direct sum of all tensor powers of the vector space V, or alternatively, it's the free associative algebra, but not commutative, generated by V. Okay? Now, so this becomes a free algebra. This becomes a free algebra. Okay, each of these spaces becomes a certain infinite dimensional graded algebra, in which every degree is of finite dimension, because it's just a finite tensor power of the original vector space. Okay? Now, the arrows become map between these algebras. Okay? And I now, so my rule will be that some AI LI will go to, so this is a formal sum, will become honest sum of alpha I T star of LI, right? If you have a map from U to V, you get a map from the free associative algebra on U to the free associative algebra on V. And if you have a linear combination of such maps, just take a formal linear combination of such maps, take the corresponding honest linear combination over here. Okay? Now, suppose I'm telling you that when you apply this T tensor, T star tensor, to this complex, this pre-complex, it becomes a complex. In other words, the differential squared, or dv, or t star of dv times t star of du is equal to zero. Okay? My question is, compute the homology of this of this complex. Okay? And what I want is that you turn it into a machine question. Okay? So so when I say compute, I really mean find an algorithm to compute that will give the answer. So I could have written here Tn of omega. Okay, so take the n tensor power instead of the sum of all tensor powers. Okay, so so there is one answer for each n, right? For each n, you get a different complex. If you look at sort of words of length n, you get for each n you get a different complex here. Okay, and But on the other hand, so in principle, the answer is a list of answers, okay, an infinite list of answers. But on the other hand, the input was very small, and I guarantee to you that it is small. All numbers are small. All dimensions are small. So there is a finite amount of information that goes in, and so you'd expect the answer as a function of n to be relatively simple. Okay, so you'd expect that the answer would be maybe for the first 15 n's things will change, and after that it will stabilize. Or maybe instead of stabilizing, it will have period 2. So for even n it will be one answer, and for odd n it will be another answer. Or I don't know, maybe there will be some other pattern. I don't know what the pattern will be, but it should be a pattern that's easy to describe, because the input information is minimal. And I want you to do that. Okay? Now, or I don't know if I want you to do that. I want to know the answer. Okay? So the reason I brought the Rubik's Cube here is that it's kind of similar. I mean, or my motivation is somewhat similar. So you know, the Rubik's Cube is nice and colorful, and when you look at it, it's obviously mathematical somehow, right? You know, there is a flavor of SO3 in the picture, okay? And a flavor of, I don't know what, well, the cube is obviously a nice pattern, okay? But it turns out that all of this ex-
external beauty and symmetry of the Rubik's Cube has nothing to do with how you would solve it as a mathematician. So the way you would solve it as a mathematician is you would convert it to a completely abstract question about a permutation group. So, you know, on the Rubik's Cube, there are 54 stickers, right? Because there are 9 stickers on each face and there are 6 faces. So there are 54 stickers, and each of the moves permutes the stickers in a certain way. So the Rubik's Cube is a certain, or defines a certain subgroup of S54, and it is the subgroup generated by a certain collection of 6 generators, G1 up to G6. Okay, the 6 possible basic motions that you can make. You can spin around each face. And then you can ask yourself a completely general question. Suppose I had G1 up to GK, which generate a subgroup inside SN. And you can ask yourself, how do I understand this subgroup? Okay, how do I, in an algorithmic way? In other words, given an element of SN, how do I decide if it's in the subgroup or not? If I've decided that it's in the subgroup generated by G1 to GK, how do I write it as a word in G1 to GK? That would correspond to solving the Rubik's Cube, right? You're given an arbitrary permutation, and you want to write it as a word in the basic motions. Okay? So somehow you completely drop all the external symmetry or the initial beauty of the problem and replace it by a much more general question for which you want an algorithmic solution, not necessarily, possibly something that would require a computer to run. So more or less, this question is the result of applying this procedure to the question of solving the equations that appear here. When you try to solve these equations, they are beautiful and elegant, and I will describe them today. But somehow, since I cannot look at them and solve them, utilizing the fact that they're beautiful and elegant, I go for the pathetic and miserable alternative approach, which is to write sort of the most general problem of the same kind and ask you how to solve it in a mechanical way. Okay, so that if I didn't solve this problem beautifully, at least I would know that it's a mechanical issue to solve it. Okay? Okay, anyway, now let's go and talk about the about the actual equations that occur here. Okay? So, you know what? I think I want to change my approach a bit. So I was going to start by telling you a little more about parenthesized tangles and how they relate to monoidal categories, as Peter was telling us yesterday. And I might still do that, but I think I want to start here. So I've changed my mind. Okay? So, KTG is a TG algebra. I didn't yet formally define what that is, but it should be more or less clear by now. And it is generated, as we have shown, by, well, the tetrahedron and the crossing, let's call this y and let's call this x. So this is y temporarily, I don't know, because this is y because if you look at it upside down you see a y in the center, and this is x because if you look at it upside down, or even if you don't look at it upside down, you see an x inside. Okay, that's the only reason. And to be honest, it really splits to x plus, which is this, and x minus, which is that. And alternatively, and I haven't shown the details, you could write it in terms of, R and R minus, so what you could do is show that x plus and x minus are y multiplied by r plus or by r minus in a certain way. And finally, you could also write it in terms of f, which is this gadget, just the Mobius band. Okay, so you could, without too much difficulty, show that you can rewrite any of these two generators using y and f's. Okay? So the problem is, well, find the relations that these generators have to satisfy. Okay? So let me tell you how you find the relations. Well, I mean, some relations are rather obvious, and I could write them down easily, and these are the relations of the kind how to write y in terms of how to write x plus in terms of y and r plus. You just write it once and for all. But that's somehow not the interesting question. The interesting question is to find the relations between these three generators or between any minimal subset of the generators. Okay? Anyway, and maybe before starting, I'll remind you that exactly a week ago, I've shown you a certain relation in which I took five y's, I think they were called phi's last time, and showed you that a product of three of them is equal to a product of five of two of them. And so relations exist. Okay, the question is how do you find all of them? Should I remind you what was this relation? So, briefly, it was the fact that you could write a triangular prism in two different ways. So, one was to take one was to take two y's and form their vertex connect sum, again using connect sums and unzips, and you get a triangular prism. And the other way was to take three y's, form the vertex connect sum of the first two, and then the vertex connect sum here. And then unzip the edge here. So first of all, you isotope it to the bottom, and then you unzip it. And the result is again a triangular prism.
Okay? So we certainly have relations between the generators, but how do you find all of them? Okay. So so here's what you do. Well, I'll use the fact that I had an almost explicit algorithm for writing any KTG using the generators. Okay? Namely, given a KTG, I I think of it as a tangle in the plane, and I write it as a composition of the basic tangles. Okay? So in other words, I take the basic tangles that make up this tangle are, well, you just put a circle around each of the places where something interesting is happening. So in this case, these are four y vertices and three crosses. Okay? Now, you take green. So you know, so now let me do it again. So maybe I was too optimistic that I could draw it. Right, so now I have these seven generators, and the claim was that I could combine them using the unzip, the connect sum and unzip operations, so as to form this picture. Okay? And the way it works is you do a, first of all, you do a vertex connect sum here. You get a picture like this. Okay? Then you do a vertex connect sum. It doesn't matter in which order you do it, but you do a vertex connect sum here. And then you, what else needed to be connected? So now I've connected these two, these three, or glued these three. Now let's glue in this one. So I do a vertex connect sum here. And now if I wanted to connect the merging of these three to this one, it connects in two places. So I also have to make the other connection, and the way I do it is by isotoping this until it's here, and then doing an unzip. So this is now the picture, and I basically continue this loop. this way. And as I continue in this way, the green shielding, so the green extra skeleton piece that surrounds each generator sort of grows and grows and grows until it surrounds the whole picture, and then the inside I just have the picture I wanted. And then I delete the green and I'm left with what I wanted. So the relations are whatever will make this procedure well defined. Okay? So again, if I want to I want to construct an invariant, or you know what, let's say it differently. Suppose you wanted to construct an invariant from KTG to A of TG. Okay? Here is how I would do it. Given a not a trivalent graph, so the white picture here, I would draw the seven generators needed in order to get this KTG. On the skeleton of each one, I would put the IME, so I want to construct Z, and Z should be defined by Z of Y and Z of this. So on the skeleton of each of the seven ingredients, I would put the core diagrams, or the linear combination of core diagrams corresponding to Z of the tetrahedron, to Z of the corresponding generator. So here I will have a huge linear combination of core diagrams, here I would have a huge linear combination of core diagrams, here I would have a huge linear combination of core diagrams. Then I would apply the connect sum and unzip operations necessary to produce the output, but I would apply them, to produce the input KTG, but I would apply them on the output. I would apply them on the core diagrams that are appearing here. And my question will be, my question is, what relations are necessary on these core diagrams to make the overall output well defined? Okay? So, in principle, it's an approachable question. So, let me tell you what is the answer. So, the answer is actually easier than it seems. So there are several types of relations. First of all, you know, if you know the value of y in the abstract, and you're given a y drawn in a plane, you don't know how to what bijection to take between the edges here and the edges here. In other words, you don't know how to identify this y with this y. Okay? So if I want to, so if I had a certain big linear combination of core diagrams on this skeleton, and I wanted to place it here, I wouldn't know if to place it this way, or rotate it 120 degrees, or rotate it another 120 degrees. Okay? So, first, for the algorithm to make sense, y has to have a Z3 symmetry. Okay? So the relations are, so the first relation is a certain Z mod 3 symmetry for y. Likewise, if you look at this picture, in the abstract, you don't know if it's an x plus or an x minus. Okay, if you rotate it 90 degrees, it should be, it becomes from an x plus, it becomes an x minus. Okay? So there should be a certain relation, like the rotation by 90 degrees of x plus is x minus, and vice versa. Okay? Okay. This done, the first step of the procedure makes sense. Okay? So, now, right, I want to get the invariant, again, I want to compute the invariant of this KTG. The first step was to take seven generators, position them in the plane in a certain way, and put a core diagram on top of each one. Okay, so you get a certain, seven things placed in the plane. Is this it? Probably forgetting something. How many are there here?
Seven.
Oh, good, right. So this makes sense. This is this picture is now well defined, or the image of this picture is now well defined. The next thing is to check that the assembly procedure is well defined. I think I'll skip it, but it turns out to involve no equations whatsoever. It turns out that the assembly procedure is simply well-defined as given. Okay? So, right, the assembly procedure was to take a connect sum here, and then possibly a connect sum here. But I could have done it in the other order. I could have done a connect sum here, and then a connect sum here. But it's very easy to check that the different orderings of assembly always end up producing the same output. Because basically the way assembly worked, or the way all operations worked, was that you clean the relevant area from cords, then you do the operation on the level of skeletons, and that's it. So in all cases, you can show that you can clean both parts completely from cords, and then do the operation, and then it clearly doesn't matter in which order you do the operation. If you do connect some here or connect some here, it clearly doesn't matter in which order you do it. So you can just show that the assembly procedure is just independent of the end result. Sorry, the end result is independent of the order by which you assembled. So the first step ends up giving no relations. Okay? Then come the most interesting relations. You see, I wanted an invariant of knotted trivalent graphs, not of pictures of knotted trivalent graphs. This is just a picture of a knotted trivalent graph, and the whole assembly procedure depended on what the picture was. I could take an alternative picture for the same knotted trivalent graph. Here is an alternative picture for the same knotted trivalent graph, and it will involve two more generators. Okay? But on the other hand, the moves between pictures are precisely the Rademeister moves. Okay? So I also need to know that this whole construction is invariant under Rademeister moves. So I need to, so the other relations are that when you construct the basic invariant move, the basic Rademeister moves out of Z's, you should get the same outputs. You should get
equal outputs on the two sides. So there is a relation corresponding to Rademeister 2, a relation corresponding to Rademeister 3, and a relation corresponding to Rademeister 4. I remind you that Rademeister 4 comes when you start talking about graphs. Okay? And there is no Rademeister 1 because we've dropped Rademeister 1 a long time ago. Okay. This done, we have constructed... So how many relations, by the way, how many relations do we have so far? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay? This done, we have constructed an invariant of knotted trivalent graphs. Now I want to know two more things. One is sort of kind of obvious and the other is a bit subtle. So the obvious thing that I want to know is that the invariant that I've constructed satisfies the unzip and the, well, has good behavior relative to unzip, delete, and connected sum. Right? So far what I've done is given z or given y, which is z of the tetrahedron, and x, which is z of the box. So given y and x, I told you how to construct an invariant of KTGs, and I told you what relations y and x have to satisfy so that the construction will actually give an invariant. But I want an invariant with properties. Okay? So I need more relations. So, I don't know, a relation for the unzip, a relation for the delete, and a relation for the connect sum that will guarantee that the invariant just constructed is well-defined under all of these, or is well-behaved under all of these. Now, as it turns out, these are actually, again, easy, because once you know that, okay, suppose you had a complicated KTG, and you wanted to unzip this edge. On first look, it appears like it's an operation that involves many generators, because there are many things along this edge, okay? But I've already guaranteed invariants under Rademeister 2, Rademeister 3, Rademeister 4, and so on. So instead of unzipping it as it is, I could have first performed Rademeister 4s to bring it to this shape, and then unzip it when the edge is small. So I only need to show well behavior under small unzips and small deletes and small connected sums. So where the edges that you use in order to, well, the edge that you unzip is actually small, has nothing on it except the two things being connected. Likewise for delete, likewise for connected sum. So in fact, the relation for unzips is a relation that involves only two generators. It's a relation saying that something having to do with the generators that will appear here times something having to do with the generator having appearing here is in some sense equal to a something that has no generators at all in it, so somehow the identity. So it's a relatively simple relation at the end. And then there is the fourth type of relations, which is the hardest to explain. Can somebody guess what it is? What have I missed? What's wrong with my logic so far? It's kind of strange, the last relation. Anyway, here's what it is.
I have used my generators in order to construct an invariant of KTGs which is well behaved. Okay? But it might not be the invariant I wanted. Okay? I have to check, right? I've used the generators indirectly somehow. I have to check that the newly constructed invariant, when applied to the generators, has the right values. Okay? So, in other words, suppose you're given this KTG. This KTG is one of the generators. It has a value assigned to it. Okay? But if I wanted to apply, or if I wanted to compute my new invariant that I've just constructed by this machine here, I would look at this picture and say, oh, this is a not a trivalent graph with four, made out of four special points. So it's a certain product of four generators. So I have to guarantee that the product of these four generators give you the back again the generator you started from. And likewise, I have to check that the product of the five generators that appear here, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, again gives x plus, and likewise for x minus. So I'll call it the stability of y and x under this procedure. Now, you can ask, why would I care about this? So the truth is that I don't really care about this. This is sort of, I only semi-care about this. You see, because suppose you had x and y that satisfy 1, 2, and 3. Okay? Suppose you had x and y that satisfy 1, 2, and 3. You'd apply the procedure and you'll get an invariant of KTGs. Okay? So let's write it this way. So given x and y satisfying 1, 2, and 3, we can construct an invariant z of x and y, which has all the good properties we want. Okay? So we can construct an invariant like this. We will compute it on, we can compute it on the tetrahedron and get an x prime, and we can compute it on the, so again, we can compute it on the box and get a y prime. We can compute it on the box and get an x prime. And x prime and y prime are not necessarily equal to x and y. Okay, they are equal to x and y once I've added assumption 4. Okay, axioms number 4, the type 4 of axioms. But anyway, the invariant zxy does satisfy all the good properties. So therefore, if you use
x prime and y prime as the new values for the generators, well, you'll get an invariant, which also satisfies a property number 4. So in other words, you will then have that z x prime y prime does satisfy that this is y prime. So in other words, I guess what I want to say is that if you know how to solve 1, 2, and 3, by applying this machine, you'll automatically get a solution. You'll get something that also solves number 4. Sorry?
Why is it good or equal to my friend?
Because the relation the relation y to the 4 equals y holds in KTG. Okay? I mean, sort of, I have to be explicit what I mean. I mean, this is schematic relation. Okay, what I mean is the relation where you take 4 KTG, four y's no, I've done it wrong. Sorry, I was facing the wrong way. When you take 4 y's looking like this, and apply the basic operator, apply lots of deletes, unzips, and connect sums to them, you will get this picture. So if you construct, so if you had an invariant z prime that's well behaved under, if you had an invariant z that's well behaved, that's defined on all knotted trivalent graphs, and is well defined and is well behaved under the operations, it will satisfy this relation.
Why don't you say that the z itself satisfies the other string in this one?
Because
yes, exactly. Yes, yes.
It is subtle. I wish I had a simpler example. In fact, I don't know. $2 if you give me a simpler example where this is somehow non-trivial. Okay. Anyway, where the last relation is not trivially satisfied. Anyway, well, I'm definitely out of time, but I should, I'm 10 minutes past. I should tell you that there is a, this is not abstract. I mean, one could write down these relations completely explicitly, and they end up each one being finite and involving 3 or 4 numbers each. Okay, so at the end of some long discussion, they become a question of this nature, or solving them becomes a question of this nature. But anyway, we'll continue on Thursday.